You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Stansberry Radio Network.
So I've got Russell Simmons, one of my heroes here today. Russell, how's it going?
Going well.
And Russell, you just came out with this book, The Happy Vegan. Before you start talking, because I know you have a lot to say, I just want to say this was an incredible book. It wasn't just like you ranting about being a vegan, and every page is filled with facts, information. I learned a huge amount reading it. Got everything like circled in here, notes taken, all this stuff. I'm not even a vegan, but now I'm strongly considering it. So you're going to convince me in this talk to go vegan. You're the second vegan I've had on the podcast, a plant-based diet, Rich Roll I've had on. Not sure if you know who he is, ultra marathon guy. But with every superhero I have on, I need to hear the origin story. You read comic books, that every superhero's got an origin story. So let's take it all the way back. I just heard you on the phone mentioning where you came from, the, you know, poverty, drugs being sold. What was happening?
I grew up in Queens. It was a lower middle class neighborhood.
I grew up in Queens, by the way.
Okay, there we go. Hollis, Queens. And 205th Street, which is the block I lived on, became the drug capital of Queens. Larry Lucas cornered the cleaners from Frank Lucas was on our corner. And so that was the heroin capital. And so the neighborhood went down very quickly. And so I grew up and I was in a gang and I had some experiences, but I escaped.
What did you have to do?
I took a lot of drugs, right? Obviously every kid took a lot of drugs, but then I went to, I was a kid, 13, Seven Immortals. We were young. I mean, we got out of gangs soon. They went out of style. I mean, but we sold drugs on the corner as we got a little older. And you know, I was lucky enough to escape to college. I had a good parents. And in college, I discovered hip hop. I mean, that's a quick story, right? You know what? And then I spent time making music. As you know, I built Def Jam Records. And
well, so reel it back. So you discovered hip hop, and this is related to everything, right up to the becoming a vegan. You seem to be really consistently good at spotting not just trends but talent.
I didn't discover hip hop. I mean, hip hop discovered me. I kind of meant that was there.
But to be fair, before you, literally, it was kind of a niche community and subculture. And then you, through Run DMC and other groups, blew it out to be globally mainstream. And that was you.
Well, my
so
first
how, do you,
record in
19, how did you do it?
In 1979, my first record was Christmas Rapping. And my first experience with that record where there was success was in Amsterdam. So I got on a plane.
How'd you get it to Amsterdam? You're from Queens. This kid from Queens, yeah. In the gangs. How did you end up in Amsterdam with that record?
We had a record, Christmas Rapping. I got on the radio in Amsterdam and exploded. I was signed to Polygram Records. I went there and I was like my first realization that hard work turned into something. You know, I mean, I actually had more in a little small examples, but that was a great example. I had never been on a plane. I'd certainly never been out of the country. And landing in Amsterdam, and they're like, Mr. Simmons, what would you like? And I was like, oh, shit, Mr. Simmons. I said, I'd like some cocaine and pussy. And the president of the record company said, no problem. So that was, you know, a revelation. I was a grown man. I could get things I wanted. Anyway, so I'm out of cocaine now, just so you know. I've been vegan, and I stopped taking drugs 30 years ago almost. But anyway, that was my experience. So that began, you know, an ongoing process of building companies and so forth.
But also spotting the talent. Like then you took your brother and made him into a huge superstar.
You know what I realized this is a podcast. It's not like I'm on CNN. I have 4 minutes.
Right. We're talking.
Right.
Is that okay?
We're having a conversation. I forgot.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll slow down. Yeah. My brother came in 83. We made a record. He was the son of Curtis Blow, the DJ. We called him Disco Sun. Curtis Blow's son was a DJ Run. And then we eventually made a record in 1983 that was It's Like That, Suck MC, and you know, that album would run the with Rock Box and everything on it, and that was a successful record. Then King of Rock came, and then Rick Rubin and I made the record that included Walk This Way. Some would say that that record kind of...
That was the bridge.
It was a bridge. At the same time, it was not great for their career because it and now you can look back and say it was great, but at that moment, for the brand, it was a very poppy record, you know. But anyway, and then we had all the experience. We started Def Jam Records in 84. 85, we made Crush Groove, the movie, and we launched LL Cool J, and then after that, everything exploded.
How did you, like, and just in terms of the idea of spotting talent, because, again, that's related to everything you've done later on, how did you say, okay, this guy LL Cool J has got what it takes to be a huge superstar?
Well, King Ad-Rock from the Beastie Boys found his tape in a box sent to Rick Rubin, who had a company, not a company, he had a logo on Streetwise Records, and that logo was Def Jam. So I reached out because he had a record called It's Yours. That was his only record. And I'll never forget it. It was commentating, illustrating, description, giving, adjective, experts, analyzing, summarizing. That was It's Yours, right? By Tila Rock. I was looking for the guy who made that record. And I met him. And he, you know, I was surprised that I said, where's the nigga who made that record? And it was surprised to see it was a young Jewish kid. So it was Rick Rubin. He was a part of the Beastie Boys. I managed them. And then Rick wanted to start a record company. I was starting one already. But he had so many compelling tracks on his drum machine and that I said, well, why not do it with him? And we started Def Jam Records in 1984. And he stayed on until 87 or 88. And he made great records, 89 probably. He made great records for us and helped build that company from the beginning. Then Leo Cohen was there before and after him, all the way through the history of Def Jam. So that's the story, the music story.
And it wasn't just like rap or hip hop. It was, I mean, you got into comedy then. You know, Def Jam comedy and all your deals with HBO. And you really discovered a lot of comedians that are now household names. Like, yeah. How did you just find all these? Like,
well, you know,
what's the ability to recognize talent?
In every case, I found talent that found talent. You know, I've been lucky at spotting, like, Rick Rubin is the greatest producer in the history of music, not only in hip hop, but in every genre. Leo Cohen's a great manager who also was a great A&R director with spotting talent. Kevin Lyles, the president, brought me Jay-Z when I was making Nutty Professor movie and said, this guy. Damon Dash yelled at me when we were filming Deaf Poetry and said, I got to put this guy on his poetry show. Who is he? He made two of Jay's records. Yeah, but who is he? Why am I going to take a poet off we're filming? He said, his name is Kanye West. So I had experiences where talented people that I gave a break to gave me a break. So that's really what it's been. It's been my ability to spot people who spot people. You know, there are very many talented people involved in my success. I like to say that I'm better off in a room where everybody's smarter than me. And if I'm the smartest person in the room, then the room is fucked.
That's my. I doubt that, but we'll go with it for this. But okay, so if you're a young person starting out, like I feel like there was one weird advantage you had when you were starting out, which is that literally
I was high.
That could have been an advantage, but you were high in Queens. At the beginning of the hip hop scene and industry, and that was like the equivalent of being in San Francisco in the 70s with Bill Gates and Steve Jobs as young guys. Like everybody in that scene started computer companies, and I feel like everybody, or not everybody obviously, but a lot of people at that time and place had a particular advantage in that you were at the center of that universe.
Yeah, I like to say that when they say that I'm responsible for this guy invented or discovered or helped or created. You know, the hip hop, I was just there at the right time. You know, I feel like what I've seen, the number of years that I've been involved and the number of successes that I've seen happen, I feel like the Forrest Gump of hip hop. Like I was there, always there, you know, I saw it all. And
not just hip hop, then comedy, movies, and now everything you've been involved in since, in terms of like wellness and healthiness and so on.
Yeah, you know, I see things that are attractive and fun and exciting, and sometimes they become commercial later. It's true. My books are all based in yogic philosophy. I've been practicing yoga for over 20 years, and it's now, you know, I'm building a yoga studio. I'm building Tantris right there at the Soho House in L.A., the entrance of where that building, because it's a trendy thing, but it's something I love, you know, and so I'm very lucky to do that at a time when yoga is exploding and yogic philosophy is more and more going hand in hand with the new consciousness that we have to evolve to survive. So
I wanted to ask you about that. Like, and I see this in your book. You mentioned the eight limbs of yoga. Almost every book about yoga just focuses on the physical poses and on kind of the physical benefits. And it's kind of, you know, a particular type of person's into yoga, but you really focus on the whole picture. I don't really see that in many books.
Those books that are talking about physical poses or the asana practice. Asana means seat. Then that's a yoga pose, a perfect asana.
And in the Yoga Sutras, so, that's only mentioned in three lines of the 185 lines.
That's right.
So it's a small part.
Threads, the one thread in the Yoga Sutra scripture is Sthiram Sukham Asanam, steady, joyful pose. And that doesn't have to relate to yoga, but I mean asana, but steady, joyful pose. The yoga asana must be steady and joyful. The relationship to the earth should be steady and joyful. So in yoga, that Americans call yoga, the physical practice, you learn to smile and breathe in difficult poses. That is part of your spiritual practice for your evolution. So you smile and breathe in every pose, right? So that's the asana practice. People who write books and don't mention the other seven limbs of yoga are missing out.
Again, it's related to your book, The Happy Vegan, like the yamas and niyamas from yoga in terms of like not hurting anybody, living a good life. I think that's totally related, totally part of yoga philosophy.
It is the core, the most important of all in all of the scripture. There are eight limbs, as you said. The first set of limbs are the social laws, ahimsa, non-harming, satya, non-lying, asteya, non-stealing, brahmacharya, control of sexual power, not to cause harm to sex, and aparigraha, non-greed. The same as the Ten Commandments. But if you learn, and those are seven other parts of that, eight steps, but if you learn to master ahimsa, non-harming, you don't need to study any other scripture from any religion or prophet. Non-harming of self and compassionate to the world, that will lead you to enlightenment. If you live that life fully, you will be enlightened.
So describe non-harming in terms of, like, let's say, relationships with people and in terms of success also. Like, a lot of people are mistaken in thinking that in order to achieve success, you have to step over others. And I feel that's a very scarcity-minded way of thinking.
I think Jesus taught two sermons, one for the masses. Good givers are great getters. Right, so therefore you do your work, you get your money, you pay the Romans their taxes on time. But he taught his disciples, just give without expectation. And those people wholly devoted to giving were better givers and were attractive to everybody and attracted more. And so paying the Romans their taxes were no problem. They were success stories, his disciples. So this idea that you have to trade with the world or manipulate the world to be successful is wrong-headed, and if you look at your own history of success, when you have success, it's because you contributed success. To make money, you have to give money. You have to give what you want to receive. I mean, give it by making money. You make someone else money, you make money. So it's whatever it is you need, you have to give it. You know, if you want love, you got to give love. This is science, yogic science. But it exists in every scripture. It's not only yogic philosophy that teaches us this. It's all the prophets.
You know, and this now I'll get right into the happy vegan. The one of the first things that stood out for me, and we'll talk about all the health benefits and all the kind of climate benefits and environmental and everything. But you mentioned that when there was one passage where you mentioned where if you're eating, let's say, an animal, you're also eating and feeling all the stress that animal was feeling. And so, you know, again, there's this kind of connection between, you know, the emotions of all the people around you and how it affects you, but also the emotions of the food you're actually even eating, treating a food as a living person, which I think most people don't realize.
You're eating a piece of yourself. If God were the ocean, you would be a cup of God. We're all made up of the same matter. We're all connected. All of what's going on here is in perfect order. It keeps shifting because of humans, more than anything, because of the human greed destroying this perfection, but it can't because it keeps moving in perfect order. So as we ingest animals, we ingest a piece of our sickness and ourself. And that sounds a little bit lofty, but that's our reality. We are not intended to eat animals. And it does not, obviously, wherever there's less animals, there's less cancer, less diabetes, less heart disease, less. Where people eat less animals, right?
Is that true? Like, well, give an example, like give an area.
We have three times the amount of diabetes in this country than the rest of the world. We have probably three times or so the amount of cancer, the amount of heart disease. There's no, you know, China study is a great study, one of my great sources, and you know, there's many great sources for this information, but there's no question that the Western diet is the worst diet in the world. And there's no question that the American government subsidizes the poisoning of America and its and the planet. $30 billion go to the meat industry, and $17 million, according to one study, goes to the vegetable industry. So we are making meat product cheaper. So we're investing in the corruption and the poisoning of America with our tax dollars. We're paying for that cheap hamburger at McDonald's on the other end.
So how did you, I mean, you go from kind of this hip hop mogul to, you know, this healthy lifestyle. They don't quite, I don't say they contradict each other, but you don't think of the two in the same sentence typically. But how did you make the transformation?
You'd be surprised to know how many artists are vegan, are sensitized to what's going on around them because they're sensitive to what's going on inside them. Artists, whether they're rappers or singers or whatever, look inside for inspiration and are not guided by the outside, and they're not sheep. So if you're not a sheep, you can stop and see that, you know, whether it's, you know, first thing the Germans want to do is get rid of the artists, right? In every case where there's horrific actions taken by the masses, it was the artist that stood up. So it's not a foreign idea that the hip-hop artists show up at the marches or speak about social and political things in compassionate ways, because that's what artists have been doing since the beginning of artistry. They've been ones who had moral compasses that came from inside rather than being programmed from the noise on the outside.
And then how do you do that cleansing so that you're not so influenced? So you're saying a key to artistry and creativity is to avoid those outside influences that are trying to program you. What's a good first, second, third step to start that cleansing so you're not influenced by the outside?
Well, one thing I recommend is meditation, because when the mind is quiet, the universe unravels. So you meditate so the mind can be quiet, and it can see what's in front of it. Thoughts come and they go, and you can see the thoughts sometimes without too much emotion. So if you take an inventory as you meditate, you know, things come across your mind that were so hurtful, become less hurtful, and you see them sometimes for what they are. And then ideas pop into your head, but, you know, this relationship to what they call God can be also defined in relationship to the higher self. The higher self is only revealed with introspection, and so you meditate to get in touch with this piece of the self that's all-knowing. I believe, you know, as a non-religious person, but practicing yoga and believing in yogic science, that you are programmed, that if you were to meditate, you could write scripture about ethical and moral behavior and about what's going to be helpful to you and to your relationship with the world. And you could write all those things. Some of those books that they say God wrote, someone could have meditated under a tree and written that, you know, whether it's the Bhagavad Gita, You ever read that?
Sure.
You know, yeah, so, or the Yoga Sutras, even the Science of Happiness. I think of the Yoga Sutras as a science book for happiness. So I think that can be written because you have it in you. So that's what I believe. And I believe there's a piece of God in all of us, and that we can tap into that God through, you know, when you go running, your mind quiets a bit, isn't it? Yoga is second.
I don't run. I just have to add. I can't do it.
You may not run, but you've fallen from a tree.
Sometimes, yes.
Everything moves slow. You've been in a car
accident. Yes, right, yes.
That's the way the world is really moving at that speed. But the fluctuations of the mind separate you from that realization. And in that case where you're falling, you see the world moving slow, there's no fear. There's just clarity. And if you could live like that, that would be an enlightened state. So this is what we're searching for. We meditate to calm the mind so we can see what's in front of us.
And so when did you start meditating? When did you start moving into this lifestyle? I mean, you mentioned earlier you were into drugs, but you've been sober for 30 years. What happened? What was kind of like a low point? Because typically what happens is the bottom is reached.
No, I had a plan. I was low point, missing a few meetings. I said, let me get sober. So I got sober. You miss meetings. I mean, and you realize at some point that, you know, what's making you miss those meetings is you're taking drugs. And so I love my business more than my drugs. I quit. I didn't feel a low point. I felt a need to evolve. And the same goes for, you know, the diet. You know, there's a moment where people have been talking about it for a long time, and I watched the movie Diet for a New America, and that really made a big difference for me.
So Diet for a New America, well, I haven't seen that movie.
It's a documentary done by John Robbins, who wrote the book, was a bestseller for many years. And one of the first books about vegan diets, and talked about, begins with this guy being raced to the hospital with a heart attack. And it showed his arteries clogged and how it had clogged, and talked about all of the things that he had been sick, and he changed his diet. And he was a big inspiration. He wrote another book called Food Revolution later. Another two very big bestseller books.
So first, when did you become a vegan? At what point after this did you become a vegan?
I don't know. I've been a vegan about 18 or 19 years. So I'd started out.
There was something that triggered it, or?
Yeah, that documentary. But also my friends who were close to me, my head of TV development, Simone Reyes, been with me 30 some odd years. She'd been a vegan a long time. I had another friend, Glenn Friedman, who had been a vegan, and they were just pushing me. And then I saw that documentary, and I decided I'm going to do it. You know, look, the government funds the cheap meat that poisons America. It's really simple. I mean, they're $30 billion helpful, but God knows how many billions are made. But the animal industry, the fact in farming industry in general, is only in America. Only with the corruption that goes along with pay-for-play politics can we have the laws that allow us to put so much Prozac and antibiotics and growth hormones in our chicken.
Is Prozac in chicken?
Oh, yeah.
Are chickens depressed?
Chickens get Prozac so they don't kill each other in tight quarters. But then we realize that Prozac also makes them fatter. Mm. And since there's no regulation on how much Prozac, and not that I'm aware of, how much Prozac goes into the chicken, then there's a real issue because then it makes you more money to give them Prozac.
Did you think then eating chicken puts Prozac in you, which leads to withdrawal and depression?
Well, let me say the one thing I know it does. Eating those antibiotics are making bacteria not resistant to the antibiotic, which means that hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people could die because we have so much antibiotics and there's so many bugs that are resistant to antibiotics. So we have real issues on the horizon if we don't stop feeding ourselves so much antibiotics.
What if you go kind of the free range route on food like chicken?
Free range is, you know, there are many loopholes in all the names that sound safe to consumers. Sunlit something chicken, they can just have one little hole and where the sun could come in. There's just so many loopholes where they trick the consumer.
So you never really know what you're getting.
No one is protecting you. Mm-hmm. That's the thing I'd say, that no one is protecting you from the factory farming industry. You can't even take a picture in a factory farm. Mm-hmm. I think you might be a terrorist if you do a terrorist might be you could get lots of years in prison for taking photos of what they do in factory farms. You can go in a nuclear facility and take a picture and not go to jail. You can go in any other workplace and take pictures and film what's going on there and not go to jail. But you cannot go into a factory farm and take pictures. That's the work that they're doing at Mercy for Animals. People going undercover and risking their lives and in exchange for sharing information on how our food is being manufactured, how the lives are being manufactured through factory practices. 10 billion animals per year made by any means necessary through rape and any practice possible, and stuffed with the amount of growth hormones that makes you like a 300-pound, 2-year-old child, as a good example. And then they stuff you with the poison, the sickness, the sadness, the adrenaline, and the rest that the animal has when it comes to your plate. It's just horrible. This shit is just crazy. It's just, you know, and it's unbelievable to most Americans. So me writing this book in a simple way, because he said it's got a lot of facts, but my daughter read my last book and said it was remedial at best. And she's 11.
That's
when she read it. She's 13 now.
That's really, how did that make you feel?
Well, at first I worried about it, but then Oprah said it was the best book on the subject. And I went to her school, this was a couple weeks later, to pick her up. I never pick her up. I always would meditate with her and take her to school. I went to pick her up and I said, guess what Oprah said?
A conversation not many dads have with their 11-year-old daughters, but right. Go ahead.
Said, Oprah is for the masses, Dad. You went to school and you can use more expressive language than that. So what she was saying about my book, it's simple. The Happy Vegan is a simple book. I only read scripts and read scripture. And sometimes I read stuff like that relates to this book. I have a lot of research done. But in general, I'm not a big reader and I'm a simple writer. You know, I didn't even finish college, so it's not a difficult read. It's a short read, but the information that is necessary is in that book, yes.
And so, okay, more on the health benefits, because a lot of people feel, and I'm just playing devil's advocate, think they're not going to get the protein, they're not going to get the iron, there's going to be various deficiencies.
That's bullshit. You're going to get all the things you need. You can get protein from anything, kale. You know, protein is everywhere. The only thing, and maybe a little B12, in most vegan diets, you could be lacking some B12, but that's very easy to replace, isn't it? So that's the only thing I'm aware of. I mean, I've been a vegan for a long time. I'm 112. I feel good.
You're 112
years old. Oh. I've been around a long time.
I was going to say you look 40 or 30, but...
Really?
Well, I saw in your book, Snoop Dogg said you looked like you were aging backwards.
Yeah, he did say I was Benjamin Buttons. That was funny. But no, there are pictures of me 30 years ago that you would be shocked.
What are other...
If you saw them.
What are other things people say about that are not the health benefits of being vegan? Like, how do people...
That's just some bullshit. They try to feed you that. I mean, no one should eat too much soy. Men could get titties. I mean, it's possible with a whole lot of soy. But I've eaten a lot of soy for a long time. It's not great. It's way better than animal product. But there are companies like Beyond Meat is a great example where they're studying the 40,000 plants of the planet and trying to come up with alternatives because we like meat. We like things that taste like meat and all that. So they're doing that. They're studying that. Beyond Meat is, and so is.
So you're battling the taste, supposed taste deficiency.
Yeah, but you're also you're being poisoned with things that are addictive in food that companies are selling. You know, a friend of mine worked at Pepsi and told me things that they do to make Pepsi addictive, just as cigarettes have ingredients in them that are not tobacco, but are addictive. So they are poisoning you and addicting you to that poison. There's cocaine is not as addictive as sugar. Fructose corn syrup is in everything. 20 times more fructose corn syrup in today's Wonder Bread than the Wonder Bread you grew up on.
I didn't know that.
Right. So there's so much, so many carcinogens and poisons and toxic stuff in your food that is addictive. It's unbelievable. So you evolve, your taste buds evolve, you get off the sugar, you get off the taste of animal products. You find, you know, I had a vegan cheesecake recently. I don't eat a lot of sweets. I do like them occasionally.
Or and pizza, say?
Yeah, pizza. I had a pizza, but, you know, not lately, but, you know. And you take, well, if I eat pizza now, right, and then I go into Craig's in L.A., they have a good vegan pizza, or I go to Crossroads somewhere, or even the pizza shop, the Viva, which is a vegan pizza shop here in New York. I go to Viva, and I have a vegan cheese pizza. I can digest the cheese. It tastes better than the real, the other cheese, the one that was made of the cow pus or the made of the, you know, the bird's period or all of the stuff that goes into making the shit you eat. That, when you taste the vegan option, at first it may taste different. It'll be good, but you'll say my regular pizza is better. But then if you eat the vegan pizza for a bit, you will know that the cleaner, lighter version is better. So I couldn't eat a real cheesecake now. It was bad enough or heavy enough eating the vegan cheese, the chocolate peanut butter cheesecake with the chocolate peanut butter vegan ice cream at Craig's is phenomenal. But if you eat the real cheesecake and the real ice cream after you've been a vegan and eaten this one, the real one, or the, because they're both real, they're both cheese. No, well, one is cheese. The cheese will taste like shit compared to the vegan option. And so your taste palates evolve a bit as you get the poison out. And at some point, if you drink a Coca-Cola, it tastes like battery acid. But for a while, it tastes good. Because you don't know. You've been programmed and you've been poisoned and you've been addicted.
I think also, like, we grow bacteria in our stomach depending on what we're eating. And that bacteria creates the hunger cravings for those things we've been eating. Yes. So it is a matter of, like, programming the body depending on what you've been eating.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of work. And that work, you do it. And before you know it, you are addicted to a healthier, happier kind of alternative. So, a more compassionate alternative.
So when you say compassionate, let's talk about that. What are the real environmental problems with kind of, let's say, the meat industry or...
Well, the cows alone, just their farting and belching is more than all the trains, planes, and automobiles put together. Almost two times.
I agree with that. And you know where I first read that? It was either Freakonomics or Super Freakonomics, where they went into the whole science that basically if you got rid of cows, man-made climate change would totally disappear.
Yeah. So with that reality...
Not that you want to kill all the cows, but...
No, you don't have to kill them. You have to manufacture them. Mm. Manufacturing of cows is what we're worried about. It's not... You know, it was 99%. Wild animals and 1% man, and now there's 99% man and 1% wild animals. It's the manufactured animals that we have to be careful of. The ones that are born into pure suffering. The ones that are stuffed with the poison. There's not enough grass on this planet. If you made the planet four times as big as it is, and it was all grass to feed all the cows we make. Can't make them. You cannot manufacture that many cows grass-fed. It's impossible. Not the price. It's impossible to even consider. Some people say it's grass-fed. You know, you can feed a cow a little bit of grass and call it grass-fed. There's so many ways and loopholes in the system. And, you know, you think people are looking out for you, and they're telling you that milk is a food group. How can you be looking out for someone when we're all lactose intolerant? If you're a Jew, you're 80% likely to be lactose intolerant. If you're an African American, you're 75% likely to be lactose intolerant. It's true that wasps are probably 60% lactose intolerant, but nobody wants to put cow's pus in their body. And you don't get calcium from drinking milk. Your body deletes calcium trying to get the calcium out of the milk. So these are interesting things that are not shared with the public because they're not in the interest of the powers that be. I worry about our government being controlled by money, things like Citizens United and other kinds of opportunities to corrupt our politicians so that they do the will of the corporation versus the will of the people. That to me is, it's horrific. We push everyone to be Democrat, to have a democratic process, and yet our democracy is so flawed. So flawed, even all the way down to the corruption of other governments around the world, so we can exploit them to feed our greed for things that we don't need.
Part of that is the medical industry, where everything is focused on, okay, what drugs can we make?
Get in a fight with one industry at a time. I have to run businesses. I start to talk about the vaccines that have mercury in them and what they do to black children, or the pharmaceutical industry and its influence over everything we do. You go into this is how you disappear.
But leaving.
So like, I just want to. I mean, yes, of course.
But what you're saying is
pills to solve all our problems. But if we would just stop eating animal products, we wouldn't need those pills.
Right. So you're saying essentially prevention is the cure, and one way you prevent, or the main way you prevent, is living a healthy life. What you put in your body, it amounts to what comes out of your body, whether it's disease or health or whatever. So, where does the trend end? Like, how do we eventually get more people eating vegan?
I got something from Leo. I looked like, how do we?
Okay, what did you get from Leo?
Leo Cohen, your daughter thinks you went through, I wonder if he's upset that I told his daughter this story about what's going to be in the movie, our life story.
Wait, there's a movie, Your Life Story? Russell Simmons responding to Lior Cohen,
who is now
on my podcast.
He's upset that he went through a blizzard to get Coke in order to sign a group. No, not to sign a group. He told, no.
I'll tell you, having an 11-year-old myself at one point and writing about all the horrific things in my life, they want to hear about it. They want to know that you came out okay and fought your battles.
Yeah, I told her that I've changed, though.
They don't want to know that their dad's perfect. They already know that you're not perfect.
Well, they've already read my life story.
In general, with fathers, they don't want, they like to think you're perfect, but they know you're not. So they want to know the truth. Little kids know the truth, whether you tell it to them or not.
Yeah, my daughters are grown.
Wait, when's the movie about your life story coming out?
I don't know. Pretty soon, because they're aggressively pushing for it. Everything hip hop is, like, I'm developing all these movie projects in Hollywood. But
ever since Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah, that and movie. Also Hamilton. You know, I have a rap verse, a rap opera. So Hamilton is that vegan?
Mm-hmm.
Vegan brownies? And gluten-free for those who are.
So what?
Some fat shit still, though. But thank you so much.
So what happens when you go out?
I like it, but it's fat as shit. But
what happens when you go out with like other musicians or other people in the industry and they don't want to eat vegan? They want to eat at like a steakhouse. What do you do? If you're in Kansas City, what do you eat?
There's always something. You can eat something anywhere. You go to.
But you're gonna get bored if you just eat like a bunch of lettuce and a carrot.
I'm not a lettuce carrot dude. If I'm in the hood, I can go to a Chinese restaurant and get curry tofu with broccoli and spinach and whatever. You know, they got curry eggplant or black bean sauce with, you know, there's tons of food. I don't worry about food. I think people think that's a misconception. And my book clears that up very, you know, it shows you how to eat cheaply and save thousands of dollars per year by eating a vegan diet, even if you live in the hood and don't have the access that the rest of the world has.
So clearly part of a secret to success for young people, if you were to give advice to young people starting out, is A, first, what you put in is what you get out. What you put into your body is what you get out. The relationships you have, what you want to have good people around you so that you get good things out of that. What other pieces of advice would you give?
I would I would think that, look, every day I practice yoga. Every day I meditate. You need circulation in your body every day. Even if you only walk for 30 minutes, you got to do that. And you need to let your mind settle and reboot. It's very good. Your brain, you can see the gray matter in your brain grow in 6 weeks. It's a dramatic shift in the way that you see the world when you meditate daily. And your nervous system calms, so goes the mind. And when the mind is calm, you can see. You know, in fluctuations of mind, they say, are the cause of suffering. And the reason and the goal of yoga is to have a quiet mind. It is, the yogic state is the same state that they refer to as Christ consciousness, or nirvana, or taqwa for Muslims, or there's something that in the Kabbalah, I can't think of the name, but this idea of union with God or union with the universe, to see the world as it unfolds, as opposed to having hundreds of thoughts at any given time. The idea of single-pointed focus on what's in front of you is the goal of everything you do. Everything you do is so you can be awake. You know, you take drugs to quiet the mind, and you meditate to quiet the mind. I think a stable, lasting process is the healthy ways, you know, to promote endorphins through exercise and through meditation and through things that are healthy. But people drink and take drugs to quiet the mind. Everybody's seeking a quiet mind. Whether they think by obtaining things, they'll rest when I get this. As soon as I get this, that's everybody's favorite rap. When I get this, I'll be done. You know, you have to be comfortable in your seat. And life's only goal is to be happy and comfortable in your seat. From that space, the universe unravels and it attracts everything. You know, you become a greater giver because you're focused on giving and you're not fearful of the world. You become a contributor. And good givers are great getters. So you're going to get as long as you give. So you got to just learn to be awake and give without too much expectation or worry about the future. Because right now we are fighting for our lives of the collective for sure. And we have to change the course of our process. I mean, we cannot continue to eat meat and animal product at the rate we are eating it. It will, one, destroy the planet, and two, we will all die of cancer much earlier than our dates that we, so we don't want that. So, or we have three times the amount of diabetes in this country, twice as much cancer, twice as much heart disease, or more than that, I think. So it, there's all of that, and we can prevent it. They told Bill Clinton, you finished. I mean, it's in your genes. He said no, and he went vegan, and now he's, you know, not only did he stop the growth of the cancer, but he eliminated it and went backwards. That's what happens when you put grit. You have a plant-based diet versus an animal-based diet.
All right, well, thanks so much, Russell Simmons, the author of The Happy Vegan, but of course, many other things you've done in your life, and thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
For more from James, check out the James Altucher Show on the Stansberry Radio Network at stansberryradio.com and get yourself on the free insiders list today.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.